The following program contains mature subject matter. Listener discretion is advised.
The latest trends and hottest topics, love and sex, handled honestly and with passion. Here's Dr. Lori, CJAD 800.
When you see kink played out in the media, let me tell you, you only get a glimpse of the reality of what it is, and oftentimes not the actual reality of what happens in people's bedrooms. Tonight, it's all about alternative sexuality. Once a month, we focus on BDSM, we focus on kink, we focus on all alternative forms of sexuality, basically the different ways people express their passion for intimacy and for sexuality. And joining me in studio are Pierre and Catherine of BDSM Circle. They are here every month. Welcome.
Hello.
We also are joined by Dane Stewart, who is an advocate. He's a director and a playwright. And there is a play happening in a couple of weeks by him, The History of Sexuality, and we are going to give away tickets tonight. So thank you for that.
Thank you for having me on.
You're going to tell us a little bit about the play. Let's start off with that since we're giving away those tickets. Let's pique people's interests.
Great. So the play is called The History of Sexuality, like you said. I've been working on it for about 3 years, and it's really about Montreal's queer community. So it's based on a series of interviews that I did. I sat down over a period of about 6 months, talked to different people who identified as queer, identified as gay in Montreal, interviewed them about what their experiences are like, and then transcribed those interviews and turned them into a script for this show.
Wow.
And a big portion of the show is a kink, a BDSM relationship portrayed on stage, and I really tried to portray the real lived experiences of people who are in a kink BDSM relationship. And I think we've portrayed something very honest, very real that you wouldn't see in popular media, like Fifty Shades of Grey, for example.
God forbid. You've just said a bad word.
Yeah, you want to make me yell or something?
Yeah, every time we bring that up, we bring up 50 Shades of Grey, we get like the same reaction because it's far from a lot of people's realities who
it's
engage
painful.
In there.
Exactly, but it's also what a lot of people who aren't familiar with the community, that's their go-to
that's all
for
representation. Well, that's a lot like people who get no sex education and turn to pornography for their sexual education because they're curious. That's all they get to see, and they assume that's the way it happens. So what the same thing must happen in the kink community. If the only exposure we have as a general society are things like 50 Shades of Grey, that's all we got. We need shows like this and discussions like this to be able to broaden what it is and to give people a much more realistic view of what it is, that the people aren't like Christian Grey and Anastasia and there's a lot, very ordinary folk. They're not billionaires.
I thought there was something wrong with me. I'm not a billionaire and I'm in BDSM.
Aren't you sad you don't look like him, right? It's like,
what?
So lots of, and that's, of course, the problem. So we are giving away tickets to The History of Sexuality. It's playing at Place des Arts, which is, that's a huge coup right there. So congratulations on that. August 9th to the 12th. If people want to buy tickets, where do they go?
If people want to buy tickets, go to the Place des Arts website. It's placedesarts.com.
All right. And then they can look for History of Sexuality. But we are giving away tickets tonight. If you are interested in going, all you need to do is text us at 514-800 with your name and email address, and we will pick. How many tickets are we giving away? Two pairs of tickets. All right, so we'll have two winners tonight. We'll pick two texters. You can call in too if you want to call in, but if you call in, talk to us, like ask us questions and talk to us, we'll pick some winners. That's what we'll do at the end of the show. Make sure I don't forget. You're laughing, but my age, let me tell you, I forget a lot of things. 514-800 to text in. Do you have questions about kink, about the BDSM community, about the pup community, which Dane is a part of? And you may have, a lot of people are saying pup. What do you mean by pup? Pop, pup, puppy, furry. right? There's all kinds of things that are related to. It's a particular community within the, and it's not just a queer thing. This is within the straight community, within the gay community as well.
Yeah, the pup community is people who, within their relationships, a person will take on the role of a puppy or a dog, and they will play that out with whomever they're partnered with, or even just in, you know, occasional sexual encounters. And a lot of people get off on the playfulness, the freedom, and the power dynamic that comes with, you know, being the obedient puppy serving serving their master, serving their owner.
It's considered BDSM because of the exchange of power.
Right.
If we go in the straight community, we can talk about the daddy and the, well, and if it's a gay community, the daddy and the little boy, or the daddy and the little
girl. That creeps me out a bit when you say things like that. But
well they're consenting adults.
Yeah, I know. It's role play. I always have to remember it is role play.
Exactly. It's not, you know, real life animals we're talking about here. We're talking about role playing.
Or in our case, you know, master and slave. You know, and stuff. So,
yeah, and all the terminology is a little bit, when you think about the terminology in all this role play, even master, slave, like these kinds of words, often gets people's shackles up, right? It's like, ooh, thank you.
It's on purpose. It's the taboo. It's this why. So for so many people, it's so interesting
because of the taboo nature of it
that comes with it.
Now, this is a good question. Do people in the BDSM community have more sex more often than the general population? And are they more preoccupied versus the general population? I guess preoccupied with sex, with their kink. Would you be able to answer that?
More sex, probably.
Mm-hmm.
Preoccupied, I think we're average. There's a time for sex and play, and there's a time to work and do your chores and do your stuff.
Right.
I think what you'll see is a lot of people will get kind of into BDSM. They'll get heavy into BDSM in the first year or two. And then in 3 and 4, it kind of like will kind of top out. And then they kind of get bored of it. They'll still do it, but it's not often like their life. Because you'll see people who, you know, they're 2-3 years in and it's my life. Everything revolves around it.
Not even 2-3 years. We see people 1 year in and it's their life.
Exactly. Mm. And they'll kind of have like, it'll have its like lifespan. Or they still do it. It's still cool, but they stop going out to dungeons. Or even if they're still into it, they kind of like transition into like a more private setting and things like that.
So you see a kind of a transition.
Absolutely. A lot of people are in and out in 3 years.
Oh, you're generous. I think it's less than that.
Yes.
So so at the beginning, they may be more
interested
in
sex.
Because
it's all new and it's exciting and it's
the new thing, you know. It's like you start
going
camping.
Well, it's like an infatuation.
Or bicycle. You buy this beautiful bicycle and you're on it all the time. But after a couple of months, sometimes the bicycle gets dusty.
Or like the gym membership.
Oh, the gym membership. Yeah,
exactly like the gym membership.
Dane, what do you think? Do you think that people in the BDSM community have more sex?
I think certain people do, for sure. Certain people are in it specifically for the sex. People seem to think that I have a lot of sex in the community. And like, I'm sorry, I'm so busy.
No time for sex.
Real life. No time for sex. Like maybe like twice a month off, like a good session. But like, I definitely don't have sex as often as people seem to think that I do.
Everybody who's in the field talking about sexuality, everybody makes assumptions right away. So you're not alone in this. Let me tell you, many of us in the field are far too busy. We talk about it, but a lot of time talking and less time doing because we're so busy. 514-800 if you want to text in. If you are interested in getting a pair of tickets to see The History of Sexuality, August 9th to the 12th, all you need to do is text us at 514-800, your name and your email. And by the end of the evening, we will pick a winner for you. Coming up, we'll talk about how kink and BDSM has been portrayed in the media and how damaging that might be to the community and maybe to our understanding.
Your relationship's on the line. Connect with Dr. Lori now. 514-790-0800. Passion. News Talk Radio. CJAD 800.
I love that song. I think it is so fitting for our show, don't you? It's like the perfect song. We'll never let it go. It's Alternative Sexuality Tonight. That means we talk kink and anything alternative, including pup play. It's part of again, part of kink, part of the BDSM community. There's the queer BDSM, straight BDSM. I don't know if they're any different. I'm not really quite sure about
they're
that.
They're based on the same thing. It's just that in some of the details, sometimes it's different. There's differences. And it's quite important because gay people have different venue. They have different services. I don't know how to describe this. Different websites.
Right. Dane will be able to tell us a little bit more.
And this
about
is why we let them do it. But
There's some integration, but there's still different, like, parts of the community will tend to play differently and things like that. There's different etiquette often.
Mm-hmm. There's people talk about the energy that is created in spaces and in events, mm-hmm. and how that energy shifts depending on the bodies that you have in the room.
Absolutely.
If you have, you know, a mostly heterosexual event where men are playing with women, it will have a different energy than if you have a bunch of gay men in a room.
How different, Dane?
Well, I mean, to be honest, I haven't been to that many heterosexual.
I was just going to say, what are you basing it on?
But, I'm sorry to say this, and Amber's going to get mad at me. It's a little more uptight with the heterosexuals.
Okay.
And you know, it's not, when I say that, there's a little bit sometimes more etiquette, and it's different etiquette, but it's like you wouldn't.
You think
touch
the
anybody,
gay men are more
instance.
Open?
Yes, I think they're more touchy. And I'm not necessarily talking groping, but they're a little bit more touchy. They're a little bit more less jealous in a certain sense, where they tend to be more open relationships than if you get the heterosexuals. Yes, there's some poly, but there'll be more poly with the gay. And that's me kind of looking in, right? So maybe you
well, and I think that gay men specifically go through this period of our lives where we feel a lot of shame about our sexual identities, and we have to overcome that shame in order to come out of the closet and then express our sexual identity. So because of that, when we get into communities like BDSM and kink, we've already, you know, worked through a lot of the shame that I think straight people oftentimes, when they enter into that community, they have to deal with that wall of shame for the very first time.
Right.
So maybe there is a level of inhibition that you have to work through.
That's a good point, actually.
That's interesting. You were talking about energy. A few years ago, we had a friend who's now passed, sadly, and he was doing show at the Black Eagle. And I'm not into men, but I remember watching him there playing with his partner, and it was very, very sexy, erotic.
Sensual.
And I was surprised, because for me to be sensual, it needed to be a woman or something, and the way it was made. So that energy, it's probably different, but again, it's not that
there's
different.
Probably more similarities than there are differences. I have a text here. I'm back in the dating game. My ex was very willing to learn and take part in BDSM because the act of domination fit in well with his narcissistic and self-serving manner. Because of the fact that he took the dom role to the extreme and was unafraid to cause me actual physical and emotional harm. Why? Yikes. I am hesitant to introduce any willing person to BDSM now out of fear of creating another abusive and self-serving dom. Is there any way to introduce someone to BDSM without having to be the submissive teacher? We've talked about dating, and if a person is into BDSM already, you guys have said it before, it's important to look for someone already who also has the same interests, rather than having to teach somebody.
You know what? That's true. But this person also needs to find a dominant that can trust her. If she wants someone who will push her limits and where she really feels like it's going to the edge, then she has to be a good sub, and she has to give the damn signals, and including the safe word and the slow word. And if she can find a dominant who is responsible and has integrity, and she's also doing it too. A lot of, you know, people say, well, it's all about the dom and it's them stopping. But you know what? You can't read minds.
Okay, but hold on. She's saying something very important here. Beyond the BDSM, that she was involved with someone who was narcissistic, and you took that opportunity to be abusive. So what's the distinction between abusiveness?
Well, this is what I'm saying, is by using your safe words, by having a pre-negotiation, by talking openly about it, she can find a partner who has integrity, who isn't abusive, that is doing it for the mutual benefit of both of them. They both enjoy the roles, and right. It's a power exchange.
Okay, one thing
as opposed to someone who... is
using
just,
that power.
Yeah, exactly. Playing a game.
One thing I see from this, and we don't know about this, but there seemed to be a lack of negotiation mm-hmm. because there's not supposed to be a situation where the dominant could be dangerous like this. There should be, like Catherine was explaining, a safe word, a stop or something, or just a negotiation saying, don't go further than that.
And my guess is that if the person... breaches those boundaries, they're out. Like,
yeah,
this is an indication that this person is self-serving, that this person is abusive,
is dangerous,
potentially dangerous, and not looking out for the best interests of their partners.
Yeah, I would totally agree. I mean, I think establishing a kink relationship or a kink dynamic, the one of the first things you have to do is establish boundaries and expectations for communication. And so that communication has to come in the form of negotiation before you enter into scenes, and also reflection after you do scenes. And if the person that you're working with, whether it's the dom or the sub in a partnership, is not respecting the things that you negotiated, not respecting those boundaries, that's an indication that that relationship could move into the field of becoming emotionally manipulative or abusive.
Right.
Dangerous.
So what do you suggest for someone who knows that they are, this is their interest, BDSM is part of their sexuality, it's part of what they want, and they're dating, and they're new on the dating scene? What do you recommend?
To start, and it's a side note, but a submissive trying to teach a dominant how to act usually doesn't work well.
Okay.
Because of the exchange of
the already dynamics.
The dynamics is it's,
right.
It's,
the dynamic is off already.
Because the submissive is telling the dominant what to do.
Right.
And so the lady was saying that she don't know how to introduce somebody and the lifestyle. She shouldn't. She should find somebody who knows.
There's dating sites. Go and date somebody. It's different if you're just both kind of discovering it for the first time with the partner that you already have,
right?
And you're both beginners. But there is you know what? Date kinky people. Start off with.
Date kinky people.
Negotiate, negotiate, negotiate. And then after scene, negotiate. And between scenes, negotiate, because it keeps changing. And this is how you find a partner that's sane. You tell the partner that good signals so the partner can push you and go further. That's obviously to what the person, a lot of subs want that. That's what they crave, is to really feel like they're being made to, right? Mm-hmm. Well, if you want the dom to, you know, that's what you have to do.
Dane, do you want to add to that?
Yeah, well, I might disagree a little bit. I think that it is possible for a submissive to teach somebody who's interested in being dominant how to participate in that lifestyle. But I think one of the important things to recognize here is that you can be involved with a community without necessarily being in a relationship or, you know, having sex. And for somebody who is a little bit fearful about, you know, dipping their toe back into the community, it might make sense to form some connections outside of sexual partnerships.
Right.
So, you know, go and meet up meet one of the many groups in Montreal where you can meet people and have conversations with people without the expectation that you're going to have to engage in a submissive scene.
I have a follow-up to the same text who wrote, I gave the signals. I could straight up say the safe words or try to stop, and he would continue. He played innocent and pretended that he had no idea and blamed being new. There's quite an array of reasons that he is an ex. I have had many good doms, even when I was a baby sub, but I never had a situation where I had to teach someone, and frankly think teaching someone how to dom goes against the whole point of being a sub, which is what you said.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
It goes against the dynamic.
That's your ex. Bravo.
But what Dane was saying is you can learn from somebody else, not within a relationship.
Mm-hmm,
and
exactly.
That we agree. It's just that if you have a relationship with someone and that submissive is trying to teach you how to dom,
It doesn't quite fit.
Well, you're better off to get a mentor.
a mentor, it's cool, mm-hmm. or somebody to give you information. I actually encourage something like this.
Alternative sexuality tonight on the program. Pierre and Catherine of BDSM Circle and Dane Stewart, who is director and playwright of the play that is taking place August 9th to the 12th at Place des Arts called The History of Sexuality. I know I will be there. We are also giving away two pairs of tickets. If you're interested in attending any of those nights, all you need to do is to text your name and your email address, and we will pick a couple of winners by the end of the program. Another texter says, "Hi, everyone. Great show. I am a novice in the BDSM lifestyle, and I would like to know where I can get information on safe rope play. There are so many sites where the information seems wrong or would cause more damage than fun. So what are your recommendations for rope, safe rope play?"
Okay. On our website, believe it or not, we don't have an article about rope play because I was never able to write an article to make it safe.
Mm-hmm.
Rope play by itself is amazing, okay. but there's some danger involved. So there's books about this.
Okay.
Yeah, Catherine?
There's some real basics. Don't put anything around the neck. If you have somebody standing up, don't put anything around the neck that they're going to fall down.
But
don't
do
attach
have,
anything to a collar.
But do you have any...
Start off, if you've never done it before, with something as simple as a rope dress. Do that a couple of times. Get yourself used to ropes.
But are there any sites that you recommend? Are there any books
now,
that you recommend? Because people need to see. Sometimes you need
well, there's,
to see.
Midori has some books, but that's fairly advanced. Right?
Yeah.
But you can start off with Midori. There are so many groups on this. Look up Shibari.
Okay.
I hope I'm saying that right. I think so.
Yeah, Shibari.
And there's different, which is like a kind of the Japanese form of it, right? And there'll be so many people on you won't have a hard time finding others that do it.
Okay.
But
makes,
to start,
makes sense.
It's hard. It's a problem.
But well, start slow.
And rope play, I do recommend, you know, getting in-person experience before you try it with somebody. Don't. There's an event coming up next weekend called La Fierté Fétiche,
mm-hmm.
Part of the Fierté Montréal celebration. There's going to be a ton of kinksters in Montreal. You can look it up on Facebook. There will be a ton of people. You can go out there and get some education, meet some people who might be able to use a pun, show you the
All
ropes.
Right. Show you the ropes, exactly.
The following program contains mature subject matter. Listener discretion is advised.
From the pleasure to the pain and everything in between, Passion with Dr. Lori, News Talk Radio, CJAD 800.
Alternative sexuality tonight. We focus on BDSM, kink, all forms of alternative sex, and your chance to ask whatever you want that has to do with alternative sexuality. Nothing is taboo here. Clearly not. 514-800 to text in. We're also giving away two pairs of tickets to The History of Sexuality. It is a play that will be at Place des Arts as part of Fierté Montreal Pride from August 9th to the 12th. Dane Stewart, who joins us, as well as Pierre and Catherine that are here from BDSM Circle. Dane is the director, the playwright. He's also an advocate. And we're giving away tickets. So all you need to do is text your name and your email address, and we will pick a winner.
A must-see
for sure. I'm looking forward to it very much so.
It's going to be like nothing you ever saw before.
That's for sure. That's for sure.
Have you ever seen somebody get flogged on stage at Place des Arts?
Oh, my.
This is your chance.
Oh, my. All right. We'll talk about that. So tell me about, let's just talk for a minute about how far away, like where do we see kink portrayed? If we put 50 Shades of Grey away, where else do we see BDSM and kink? Now, I know I saw you guys on a show called Kink, but that was like a decade ago.
Yeah,
there's been a couple little shows since, but
okay.
The one good thing about the media is most people know what a safe word is now.
Yeah, that's a good
thing.
I mean,
you know what? You get jokes on everything from The Simpsons to regular TV shows to God Love Billionaires, because one of them is kinky.
Okay.
And that's actually really well portrayed on there. But, you know, there is an awareness, But then again, like anything on TV, it's sensationalized. You see little bits. You don't see all the negotiation or the boring part of the everyday integration. Right.
Well, we did see it in 50 Shades. You saw the negotiation. I mean, it was like a big contract and stuff.
It's a big joke there. I mean,
well, okay. It's just that is a really, let's say, idealized view. You know, you've got the sexy billionaire and the university graduate virgin. Right. Who's right into sex.
It's the romantic notion. You know, it's not.
And they're realistic. They're reading that contract, you know, point one. You cannot think about everything. I mean, you always have to negotiate. You always have to be talking about this. So, yeah, it's a movie.
It's the Cinderella story. Like, it's just a fairy. Exactly. It's another fairy tale.
There's good things on the medium.
When you did the show Kink, they also, I remember it was like, extreme stuff that they showed.
Well, you know, a bit.
Okay.
What do you mean, a bit?
But, well, we weren't necessarily the most extreme people on
no,
there.
No, you weren't, but right? They, but it was a show.
But they did, I mean, but the thing is, you'll what they would do is they would follow you around, and they'd follow you around for months.
Okay.
So it was, and you know, you get to the point where you're just doing your everyday stuff, and you forget the camera's there.
Right.
I mean, yes, there's obviously times when you need the camera's there, but there's other times. I mean, because they'd film you doing the dishes. They'd film you putting your shoes on, just in case something happened, right? And so there was times where, you know, I'm just dealing with life, or I'm in a scene, or I'm playing, and you kind of forget the camera's there. So you're not necessarily TV friendly as much. But they also, you know, you have a 3-hour scene and there's one really intense part.
Guess what, 10 seconds they show. Right.
So people think that you're just like so extreme. It's like, well, that was really kind of like, you know, the few ending finish moments of the ta-da, right? Mm-hmm. If you know what I mean. So
it actually happened to me. Me and the submissive I had at the time, we decided to show them a full scene. You know, the negotiation, the warm-up, the climax, and after that, the cool down.
And they
only showed that 10 seconds, and you can see it at the beginning of the show, and where I'm really going hard at her, and that's all you see. You don't see anything else, and that's putting people in the right context.
Right. Well, it's the climate that we live in right now, though. You know, the media, whatever the form of media, they want to get likes, they want to get clicks, they want to sell ads, they want to sell tickets.
Right.
And to do that, they sensationalize.
Exactly. We've always done that. I mean, this has always
been...
Yes,
for sure. I think it's a bit more present now than it
right.
has been.
Well, because
past.
We have so many avenues where we can do that, right? So let's get to a call. We've got Lori on the line. Hi, Lori.
Hi.
Hi.
I just have a question for you, Doctor. How do I take, like, because I don't find it very, like, attractive. Like, I don't feel hard at all when my husband always, like, when we're intimate, he wants me to beat him.
He wants you to dominate him. He wants you to hit him.
Yeah, and it doesn't turn me on at all. But like, he loves it. It turns him on, and I find it so not pleasurable for me. But he always asks me like him like
to spank him or to do. Okay.
I find it funny. It's so weird and like.
You don't feel good. You don't feel right about it. It doesn't feel like it's not something you're enjoying. Does it turn you off?
Yeah, and then I laugh in bed. And
right.
It's funny for me, but and I don't know how to
that's
act,
not sexy anymore.
No.
Right.
And he wants me to, like, take a strap on and, like, and I don't know, is it going to ruin our marriage?
Okay, this is a very good question that you brought, Lori. I'm just going to, because the connection is bad, I'm going to take you off. Just keep listening to hear us talk about this. But this is a very good question because this is something I've heard multiple times. We've talked about it on the show before. When you have a partner who, and you got into this marriage, you didn't know that the kinky stuff only came out later. It wasn't initial. And where you have one partner, for example, who wants to be dominated, but the partner doesn't enjoy, like completely doesn't enjoy the sexuality. Like if it's a turnoff, how are they going to get anything out of it?
It's like anything else. If it's not consensual, just by the fact that the other partner does not enjoy it, that it's not, she's not, or he's not into it, you shouldn't force that person to do something like this. You have to have that need. And that lady, I think, I understand her. She shouldn't be doing this. But now they have a problem.
Well, wait.
Wait.
Because on the other hand, you know what? Right now, I think she's still very uncomfortable with talking about it and stuff. She's laughing, which is often a sign of like nervousness or anxiety or awkwardness. Exactly. And what you have to do is sit down in a really non-sexual setting, you know, and talk about it. And it may be that there's parts, maybe not, let's say, the strap on, but maybe if you had a crop, you could do a few things. And what you do is you might be able to negotiate where it may not be
a turn on, but it doesn't have to be a turn off.
But it's not a turn off.
Right.
Exactly.
And I agree with that. And that's
And you know, you might be able to meet a compromise where, you know, if this is creeping into every time where it's like, okay, we do this time, and this time it's vanilla.
Right.
So you can start to kind of separate it, and it's not the same pressure all the time.
Right. And that's perfect advice. It's exactly what I would say, is that you have to negotiate this. Of course, when you're in a relationship, you want to please your partner, and you want your partner to be happy, but not at the expense of your own happiness every single time.
And sexuality.
Right,
exactly.
And sexuality. So if you find a place, some level where you're not turned off, you don't have to be
not
turned on,
off.
But you're not at least grossed out by what you're doing or repulsed by what you're doing, and negotiate that with him. But he needs to understand that too, that this is not in you, that he, as much as you want to please him, he has to please you too. It has to go
both ways.
So this is something that they need to negotiate. Now, somebody texts in, should they divorce? I don't see why people have to divorce over this if you can find a compromise and a negotiation. This is only one part of their marriage. It's not the entire part of their marriage. Yep. One part. So how do we, if we love each other, if we want each other to be happy, and we want to be happy together, then how do we come up with something that works for you and works for me? Other couples I've known have also extended or opened up their marriage. So in other words, where the partner, the kink partner, may go and engage with a professional dominatrix, for example, or somebody that they can be submissive with, without having sex, like with certain limits,
certainly,
and then go home to have the sex with their partner. So there are different ways to negotiate this. And sometimes if you go see a therapist, like a sex therapist or somebody who is who understands the kink world a little bit and who
like
can
Dr. Lori.
And who can help you do these negotiations, that's something that could be really, really helpful. And it's a great question. Like, how do we negotiate this when one partner is not?
I really hope
kink.
It works out for
I hope it works out too. And we'll continue that, because I think that's a very important topic for many, many people.
Straight talk that's all inclusive. Passion with Dr. Lori. News Talk Radio, CJAD 800.
Alternative sexuality tonight and kink. What a great question Lori had. You know, when she's a partner, her partner wants something that turns her off. And how we need to negotiate that. And I think we all agreed that you could negotiate and compromise and find something that you do that doesn't necessarily turn you on, but that doesn't turn you off, or that doesn't at least that you can feel neutral about. And then off air we were talking, and Catherine brought up the issue and saying, well, not every woman loves to give oral sex to, let's say, straight couples, or but mate, guys too,
hey,
gay couples too, right?
That's a lot of blowjobs.
That's right. So that feel neutral about it. They don't feel aroused by it, but they do it because they love their partner and they want to please their partner. But they may feel completely neutral about it, whereas you might have others that really enjoy giving, and that's okay. That both are okay. That's the reality. But these are the kinds of things that get negotiated. So okay, maybe you won't get it every single time we have sex, but certainly.
And then you have vanilla times.
And then you have other times. So, but it goes the same for different,
exactly.
different activities that one person might like and the other person might not. Might not get aroused by.
And for some people, like a blowjob might be a hard limit. Like, you just never want to have a dick in your mouth, which is, sorry, I got a little bit too vulgar.
Maybe a tad. I'm glad it's you saying it, not me. Now, Gray writes, and this is his name, remember the joke, 50 Shades is only famous because the guy was a millionaire. If he lived in a trailer, it would be an episode of Criminal Minds.
Oh, I like that.
Yeah. A question about the play, Dane.
Oh.
It says, does it focus only on gay relationships? I mean, male on male, or does it also include lesbian relationships? I'm probably going to see it either way. I'm just curious.
It's actually more lesbian relationships than gay relationships.
Oh, isn't that interesting?
Yeah, we've got sort of three couples that we follow throughout the course of the show. One of them is a pup handler, BDSM male on male relationship, and then we have two lesbian relationships that we follow. So it's sort of my goal was to cover the gambit of queer experience. So we're not just seeing the kink aspect. We're also seeing where queerness intersects with the lesbian community, with race, gender, sex work, all of these different things.
Wow. You can cover all that.
I try to.
History of sexuality. I'm really looking forward to that. I think it's a feat to be able to compress all that. Knowledge, let's just say,
like activity.
Well, all that activity, but that knowledge or those experiences, and condensing it to show that range.
Well,
you know?
And I tell people it's more of like a kaleidoscope of the queer community than a full, in depth, comprehensive narrative for one couple.
Then you would want to read a book, right?
Yeah, or you'd want to see a show with just one couple as the lead story. But this is a series of people.
Is it humorous? Is it
There is some humor. I think it's funny, but I wrote it, so I'm a little bit biased.
That's cute.
And it's also pretty intellectual as well. So if it delves into the academic history of sexuality
and the politics
as well,
of it.
The politics of it, but then we also have some very sexual, sensual scenes as well.
Okay, so a little bit of something for everyone. Mm-hmm. So the play is at Place des Arts. You can go to the Place des Arts website and to get your tickets. It's called The History of Sexuality, August 9th to the 12th. And I'm going to call out our winners. We got a lot of people interested.
Oh,
a lot of
great.
People interested. So congratulations to Courtney and to Michael. So those two, you're going to get an email. We'll give Dane all that information, and he's going to send you an email with your ticket information, right?
Yes, you will get
that's
it from me
the
to,
way we'll
tomorrow.
We'll do it. All right, wonderful, wonderful. So we were talking about I don't know what else you want to discuss, if there's anything that we missed on in terms of portrayal. I know you had a lot to say, Dane, about that kind of thing too.
Yeah, well, and one thing that I think we didn't talk about, we touched a little bit on shame earlier. And I think that's something that's important to come back to with these representations that we see. If we're going to talk more about 50 Shades,
mm-hmm.
We see this portrayal of BDSM where it's highly aggressive, I'd say. And as somebody who has kinky impulses but maybe hasn't experimented with them, to see that and think, oh, that's the only option for me,
There
might be a lot of shame that you feel about going out and experimenting with that.
That's a good point.
Whereas we don't see the like love, the aftercare that comes with that, the just like also just the normal boring things that come with a relationship. Like my kinky relationships, we have kinky sex, we have we do BDSM, but we also do things like go to the movies or go out for dinner or have pizza and like
so it's really only a small what you're saying it's one part but not the, it's not the whole part
sure, like
exactly
couple
it's like what
like any couple
right
a BDSM relationship or any fetish has to be as its own place. It must not take too much space in your life, and like I always said, you have to control your fetish and not it controlling you, you know.
Yes, well, if that's the case, then they end up in my office where
well, yeah.
Unfortunately,
yes.
It hurts. It can hurt relationships. If it takes, that's like any compulsive sexual behavior, whether it's a fetish behavior or anything else that you
or
can't.
Or food or drink.
Right.
Or,
Yeah.
Or anything else that's done compulsively and that interferes with your daily functioning. Certainly if you can't go to work because you're so preoccupied with where you're going to get your next spanking, so to speak, that's a problem.
It
becomes a problem.
Like for us, we have a dungeon in our house, but when we're not using it, the door is closed and we have other stuff to do. We do the dishes. We do the cleaning. I do the renovation.
Take care of your dogs.
Take care of the dogs. Yes. Real dogs. Real dogs.
That's right. All right. Not the pups.
Hey, people can take care of me.
I have three pups.
That's part of what it is to be in the pup community. For people who are interested to know more about this, where do they go? Where would you send them?
For the pup community, I run a group on Facebook called Woof MTL.
Okay.
It's Montreal's group for people who are interested in human pup play or human pet play, people, you know, role playing different animals. You can join that. We do a couple events every month.
Every month?
Yeah, we do a play party.
You have that many people? How many people are in this group?
Our last play party, and this is the people who showed up, it was about 85 people. Showed up for that event.
Wow.
There's about 500 in the group on Facebook. So
see, people think, and this is, they think that it's so rare,
one.
Right? That they think, well, that's what's changed, by the way. Yes. I've been in this field for 30 years. 30 years ago, without the internet, I had a lot of people coming into my office with these kinds of pulsions or
sure.
feelings, and they thought that they were all alone in the world. Like they had no
yes.
idea and were very, very confused about it because there was no access to groups. There was no access. So it's
we did have our own codes. I was king pre-internet, and there was all these different ways you'd fill out people to try and find each other, and you know.
You had ways. Of
you
course
had
you had
ways. But it but sure was a lot harder than it is now.
Yes.
And if you wanted information on how it was safe or what it was, or am I the only one that has this particular fetish, it was a lot harder. Now it's...
Library didn't have
Google it.
Books on this.
No, but in my training, we did. Like we had people who had written on this, who had studied this, who... So I studied in my training. I studied all the different fetishes, and in my early practice when I worked with the hospital, we saw every kind of fetish come through our doors because precisely people felt weird, crazy, alone. They had no idea what this was about. So that was back then. I see far, far less of that today.
Isn't that wonderful?
And if you look back at the gay male leather community specifically, they developed a really interesting system for communicating their kinky impulses. A couple decades ago, the handkerchief.
I remember that. Put it on one side or the other side,
the
or something like that.
Colors.
So you'd put a handkerchief in your back pocket. It would be on the right if you were more in the submissive role. It would be on the left if you were more in the dominant role. And then different colors would indicate different activities. So yellow would be
Hey, at a time, there was the earring thing too. Remember, if you wore an earring on one side, you were gay, and if you wore it on the other side, you weren't. I remember this like years and years and years ago, way before you were born, Dane.
But still do armbands.
Oh, the hanky coat is still like very present
is
in the community.
Yes.
It's just I would say not as necessary. For,
right,
yes.
People can just
sew
on your shoulder and say, "Hey, by the way, are you?"
But it's funny because in the beginning of the internet, some people would see the code for the handkerchief. And they would put this on the heterosexual website.
Okay.
And then these men would go around with the handkerchief in their pocket and not understand why they would be hit.
They'd be hit on,
remember,
right?
And I remember telling one guy, it's true, it works. If you're gay.
Right. It's the gay. It was the gay code.
It was the gay code, yeah.
Right.
Oh, yeah, they were way ahead of the heterosexual.
Well, the gay community
part, right?
has been way ahead in all the alternative world anyway, in terms of the leather, in terms of the clubs,
not
in terms
more acceptance for like 30 years behind.
More history, if you want to find something about the history, something in writing, you go on the gay, because I've been doing some research about the heterosexual, you know, BDSM. There's nothing.
Right. Far more in the gay community.
But in the gay community, you find things. And it's...
Guys, we've come to the end.
Oh, my gosh.
We'll see you next time at the History of Sexuality at Place des Arts, August 9th to the 12th. Get your tickets. This is not to be missed. And there's nothing of its kind in Montreal, and you'll never see this kind of thing at Place des Arts. Well, hopefully you'll be there again, but at least this year, for sure not. So again, that's great. August 9th to the 12th, the Place des Arts site. Congratulations to Courtney and Michael. You got pairs of tickets for that. Thank you, guys, Pierre, Catherine, Dane, for being here tonight. Thanks to our technical producer, Dave Simon. Connect with me on social media at Dr. Lori Batito or through my website, drlori.com. Coming up next on CJAD, the CTV National News. Have a great rest of the evening and remember to live your life with passion.